Welcome, everybody. I am Amanda Dennis, the co-founder of Life Force Families, and Natalia is also on the line.
Hi, Amanda.
Hi.
Good afternoon to everyone in my time zone. Good morning to everyone in your time zone.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome, everybody, and we are going to go ahead and get started with our second Life Force Families call. Actually, before we jump in, I just wanted to make a couple of announcements. First, Doris's, or the Rose Program's Culinary Institute is this weekend. So anybody interested in attending last minute, we do have some spots available. So it's an amazing course, and you will learn wonderful recipes. They're all amazing, easy to make, and really inspired. Doris is, if you've had the pleasure of eating Doris's food or cooking with her, you know that she really is very special and knows how to put together the foods that that we all eat in this lifestyle and put them together brilliantly, so you're excited for every meal. So if you can make it, it's not too late to sign up. You can go to the events page on the Detox the World website and sign up for the Culinary Institute this weekend. And then also the Rose Program, or the Rose Cleanse, is available again. And it's a 60-day experience, meaning you have 60 days of access to all of the materials and the virtual living room. And that's the area where the online chat forum is, and also all the audios and all of the written materials, et cetera. So you have a pre-cleanse period that you can determine how long you want that to be, and that's when you're getting your body ready and getting your colonics scheduled and all those things. And then it's a 30-day cleanse, and then there's a post-cleanse integration period where you can make sure that you are feeling confident to go back into your lifestyle and with the changes that you've made. So that is available, too. You can access that from the homepage of Detox the World. And then just for you, so you can mark your calendars, this call is the second Tuesday of every month at the same time. So it's 12:30 Eastern time, the second Tuesday of every month. You can just note that. And then I had a couple people email me and say, can you let us know about this earlier so we can arrange our schedules? Consider yourself notified. It will be the rest of the year, the second Tuesday. Anything else, Natalia? Any other announcements?
No. I mean, I don't often plug things, but I just have to say, like, Doris's culinary class, everybody leaves feeling completely enlightened. They are just so excited by their arsenal of new recipes and their empowerment where, you know, food is concerned. The people who finish the course, and you can look at all the testimonials, but like, it's one of those things. If you're on the fence about it, I think this is a small class too, so there's gonna be tons of individual attention, and I just think have to say, like, if you're, you gotta go for it.
Awesome, yeah, and it's just fun to be around Doris and around all the other people that show up because there's so much excitement, and so it's always a good. Inspiring weekend to spend. Okay, well, Natalia, did you want to start with any topics today, or do we want to just jump into the Q&A?
I'm happy to jump into the Q&A and make sure people get their questions answered. So
okay, awesome. All right, so we were thinking about going for about 75 minutes today. We were going to do Q&A live, and then also questions that have been entered into the dashboard. Remember, you can press 1 on your keypad if you have a question that you want to ask live, and you can also enter in a question into the dashboard that you can access from the email that you received about, I think they sent it out about 8 hours before the call. So you can click on the link in there and then enter in your question on your computer as well. And then the last 10-15 minutes we were going to spend doing some affirmations for parents that that I came up with that will help any of you that are having some challenges with your children. We can go through some affirmations to hopefully change some of your mindsets and perceptions. So we'll do that at the end. All right, so go ahead and press 1 on your keypad now if you have a question. And we can also begin with some of the questions that we've already gotten. Okay. I'm going to start with one that we received earlier. My son Nicholas recently developed an allergy to soy. Soy is in everything. I feel overwhelmed at finding a diet free of soy and still enjoyable and fun. I have begun working toward a raw diet, making smoothies, but I work two jobs and find it difficult to have things available for the children when I'm not home. Please help with some guidance.
Well, I mean, I don't know what kind of product she's getting. I guess when she says soy and everything, she must mean like those bits of soybean oil, little bits of different parts of soy, even though you're not buying a soy product per se. You know, first of all, it's a big red flag, the fact that there's soy laced in everything in some way, because, of course, the soybean industry, I believe it's the largest part of the agricultural industry in the United States. So that alone is kind of a shocking, bit of to become aware of. But, I think it just brings back the concept that we have to have basic, simple foods at home for our kids and get them used to eating food as opposed to these sort of snacky, funny things that come in packages that, you know, that we've all kind of, you know, myself and my own family included in it, you know, in a certain sense, have all kind of agreed that it is okay. I mean, whether for in our family it's the Cascadian Farms bars that my kids love, or, you know, maybe it's a quote, a healthy chip or something, there are compromises that that I make to kind of make everyone feel like, okay, the kitchen isn't as hardcore as my mother might be. I like to put things out, for them. I don't like to. I do it as a bridge, and I don't like the fact that I do that necessarily. And I think a lot of us moms are making compromises that we're kind of just going along with, even though we're not 100%. It doesn't represent what we believe 100%. But I think it's just a matter of either finding those products that don't have anything with soy in them, which is difficult. But it's going to be a matter of identifying these things, and just like any other allergen or substance that can be particularly offensive to children. Whether it's peanuts, or corn, there's going to have to be eventually, there's going to be a line of products that don't have these things in them at all. And I'm sure that's going to come, and with enough of this need, this need is only going to grow, of course, over the years, because more and more kids are going to show up, show signs of soy allergies. But in the meantime, I think it's just a matter of having whole foods in the house in abundance and saying, kids, this is food, this is what we eat when we're hungry, and mommy is working two jobs, and I don't need to be wasting money on foodless food, and start spending our time where I could be with you guys and doing other things, searching for for brands that don't have this one particular ingredient in it, all because we want to find things that are going to look and taste like the things that your friends eat. I think it's just a kind of an awareness around that. It's going to be hard. I mean, it's not an easy thing to do, to say to your kids, well, this is really what we have to eat. But I can't really think of a different solution other than finding specifically the products that don't have any traces of soy-laced ingredients in them, which is, again, as she says, becoming harder and harder. But that's the best I can say. Amanda, do you have any ideas?
Well, for example, the food that we have on the converting the picky eater, like the transition food chart, that's on Life Force Families. There we list the cashew bars, or cookies, the Cascadian Farm, Late July Oreo. Then we have, like, for chips, we have the Guiltless Gourmet, Garden of Eden, Food Should Taste Good. Do all of those, and my kids don't have a soy allergy, so I haven't looked at every single ingredient that goes really far down on the list. Do all those, does all have soy at some level, I'm guessing?
Well,
like the soy,
I'm with you.
And all
I haven't,
that stuff?
You know, Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think there are these, I think what's going on now is that they're not primary ingredients. They're subtly slipped in there. And probably given the fact that you're asking this question, knowing that we don't support a soy-based product anyway, I'm guessing that that's probably the case for a good majority of them. And, you know, it's a task that we, you know, as we allocate sort of our task list for the next steps for Life Force Families, it would be something that we could do. We can undertake to highlight the products that are free of anything offensive, including that, and maybe for a corn allergy, maybe for a soy allergy, we could, you know, break it down a little bit more specifically. You know, but now, for now, it's going to be her with her fine-tooth comb and her very flexible children.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. I mean, the general things of having, you know, having the olives and the apple slices and the bananas and the things that they can reach for that are obviously not packaged is just like you said, the obvious answer, but she's saying specifically when she's not home, that's when it's a challenge.
Right. And that's so in that case, you know, I don't know what the age of the children is, but maybe that's a case of on weekends making a whole bunch of root vegetable chips homemade in the oven, and making homemade bars. And certainly if she were to get the raw food bars, they wouldn't have soy in them. It sounds like she's exhausting the raw food area. But even just, just the simple, inexpensive ones that they sell in bulk at the health food store with the date nut kind of roll-ups, those are pretty basic. But those kinds of things can be made at home so easily, you know, even if they're not properly food combined, because that's just not the issue at this stage. In this situation, doing rolled oats and raisins and, you know, applesauce kind of based snack foods, there's so many recipes out there, and, you know, I would encourage her to do those sorts of things because they'll sit in the fridge. Those things will sit in the cupboards. The homemade chips certainly will. Maybe, in fact, Doris would like to volunteer some recipes for that very purpose, and I'm sure she has lots of tricks up her sleeve where that comes in. But homemade granolas, you know, one of the things that my kids love is they take the, they'll use a regular granola, like a good ingredient granola, even though for women, granola is not a good thing because of the mixture of the combinations of foods and the different things. We have to make sure, of course, that it doesn't have any soy oil. But you could make up a homemade granola or muesli. And, again, this is a food-combining faux pas, but it works great with the kids. They like to make those parfaits where you take the goat yogurt, put that at the bottom, and then layer the muesli or the granola next, and then take some fresh berries and layer that next, and then the yogurt again, and then again and again stack it up, and then it makes this beautiful parfait. And those the kids absolutely love as a snack.
That sounds really good.
They're great. In fact, you could probably even put them in the freezer, a whole bunch of them in the freezer. And then, of course, making homemade ice cream, throw that in the freezer, and that's always there for the kids, especially if we're talking about tahini banana-based ice creams, they can just eat that like a snack. It's not like, you know, oh, kids, you can't have your ice cream before dinner. It's like, oh, kids, go have some ice cream because that's the way they're going to get their tahini and banana fix.
So, and we don't need an ice cream maker to make ice cream, right? We can do it in the blender?
Absolutely. I mean, if you have a blender, it depends on a few things. If you have a blender that crushes ice really well, like the K-Tech or the Vitamix, then without a doubt, of course. If you don't, then you're going to want to make it, you know, it's going to be a little bit denser because you're not going to have all that ice to make it more, to offset the density. But tahini, banana, you might add a little water, blend all that up really smoothly, and then put it in the freezer, and it'll get nice and solid. And when it comes out, it just needs to sit out for a few minutes, and then its creaminess comes back, especially if you're using one of those high-powered blenders.
Okay. Well, and then there's also like the avocado and cacao pudding that you can do. We have that on the site.
Exactly. That's brilliant. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, I mean, now that we're kind of going through it, there are a lot of options. It would take some pre-preparation, but it's the kind of thing that she could do on the weekend and just have them ready and in the freezer. Also, there are a lot of packaged popsicles that are just basically fruit juice that don't have extra sugar that she could get too.
And if it's density, I mean, I don't. Again, this is where I haven't seen every single ingredient. I don't have it in my head right now, but you know, like the Alvarado Street Bakery bread, you know, could there be some sort of soy derivative trace something? Maybe I'd have to check the ingredient list. But you know, my son, for example, loves to pull out the goat cheese, and you know, he's 9. He's been doing this for a few years though. He'll pull out the goat cheese and take the. I mean, be careful if you know if your kid isn't adept with something that slices. But he takes the little French cheese peeler, and he runs that across the cheese and puts that on the bread with some mustard, and he loves that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the kind of thing that can be done, too. Also, you can make your own, what is it called? You know, when you take the hazelnut and the chocolate, like a Nutella,
Ooh.
You can make your own homemade Nutella. And my son also loves to take the sprouted grain tortillas and spread the homemade Nutella. And there's some other healthier brands out now, too, of that. And it's just a hazelnut spread with chocolate. And then spread that on the tortilla and roll it up. And make it like it's like a chocolate sandwich roll up.
Wow, that sounds incredible. Wait, so is that just hazelnut butter? And then what's the chocolate?
Yeah, you can
just
use cacao powder. Yeah, cacao.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. And you can add a little agave if you want to. You know, it's for the kids. You know, it can be all sort of, you know, fandangled.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, so I mean, there's a lot that can be done that's, they don't have to do, you know, kitchen prep and, you know, anything dangerous, but it's just using the simple ingredients and having plenty on hand, even just putting honey on bread. You know, when I was a kid, when we were all kids, I mean, we didn't have these options. I remember there were 3 things in our cupboard. My mother had prune juice, little boxes of Sunday raisins, and we had, for whatever reason, little miniature bags of Frito-Lay Fritos. I don't know where those came in on the spectrum.
What a combination of things. That's so funny.
I know. And then we had the same three things for my entire childhood in the refrigerator, cottage cheese, yogurt, and milk. And that's all we had in the house. And somehow
wow.
I managed to eat to find myself a snack.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, it does, again, it points to this time that we're in where we need, you know, so many options and it needs to look like what all the other kids have and all of that you brought up in the beginning. It's just underscores that for sure.
Oh, and there are those great the fruit roll-ups they have today that are, you know, what are they called now? Oh gosh. You know what? I wish I had a list of brands for her. But, you know, let's put together a list of extra stuff because there's a lot on the market now that there wasn't available when we first put Life Force Families together. And, again, I just send the message out that we are ramping up. It's taking us a little time because there's been so much on our agenda. But, you know, but we'll do more and more to have this kind of stuff available to you all. That's our plan.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, hopefully that helps this individual. And if you want to post this question in the community, then all of us can be on the lookout. And as we come across things, like I'm thinking Larabars, do they have soy in it? You know, so just like as we're all coming across things, we can post in the community too, on the Life Force Families community. So thank you for the question. And let's go to Azure. You have the mic.
Hi, ladies.
Hi.
Hi, Azure.
Good morning. I have a 3-year-old, and we've been dealing with some what I am assuming is just eczema on her, like, hands, on the back of her hands and, like, kind of just her wrist area. We eat this way. I mean, she has green juice every day. We do sprouted green tortillas, goat cheese, goat yogurt, dried mangoes, Larabars, coconut water, smoothies. She eats how my husband and I eat. We eat mostly on point. So I'm wondering what ideas you might have. I mean, my instincts are that it's possibly sugar related, but you know, she has, it's all natural sugars that she's getting. Do you think that it's just too much natural sugar? I just wondered if you had any insights about that.
Did you say how old she is?
She's three, almost three and a half.
She's been about
a year on and off that, you know, it's kind of there, and she's scratching it all the time, and I'm worried that she's going to kind of scar her little, you know, her little hands are going to get scarred even.
Mm-hmm. And is it coming out in like a cluster in one part of her hand, or is it all across the hands kind of distributed evenly?
No, it's like a little cluster on both hands, on the back of, you know, the top of her hand, and mm-hmm. kind of right where, like you'd wear a watch, you know, kind of right in that little area, and then onto the top of her hand.
Mm-hmm. Well, when something's pushing through the skin, it's usually an indication of an intestinal overload. With a child, it can be it can either be a yeast situation, which you're rightly mm-hmm. identifying as something sugar related, or it can be something that it's the deep in her system that's being, you know, slowly worked out because of the way you're living. Or, I mean, you know, I tend to think, and not everyone will agree with me on this, that we tend to bring things in from previous lives, and that sometimes when we have unidentifiable expressions of a manifestation of an illness, that can be from something before, especially when we're talking about a child. Often in the case of birthmarks and things like that, I believe that plays an important role. But again, that's a very something that not everyone would agree with. So it can be any of those things, really. I mean, the most important thing is that you're living the best, at the, you know, the highest level for her, you know, in terms of her biochemistry. And then if there's something emotional or something she's holding on to from, just another dimension, you know, if it was the best way to describe it, then processing her life with such a great set of parents and a great perspective will only help that kind of thing heal. So you would already be in, you know, the fact that you're living from a vaster worldview will only, you know, accelerate any kind of healing that needs to be done in her body in this lifetime. But in terms of what you can do practically, is there, and it's not showing up anywhere else?
No, it's not. Interesting. I mean, yeah.
And did she ever have thrush or a diaper rash issues or anything like that?
She had, you know, kind of your standard, like every now and then, like, oh gosh, poor baby, but not like a, we didn't consistently battle it. You know, she nursed and 20 months and didn't eat solids for the first year. You know, she was pretty, mostly green baby.
Mm-hmm. So, and what's your health like?
When I was pregnant, you know, she was beta. I mean, I totally know that. Just a minute, baby girl.
Mm-hmm.
You want to close it? Okay. When I was pregnant, I was eating totally differently than I'm eating now. You know, so it's absolutely not lost on me that there's a potential connection from how my husband and I were eating to, you know, what's showing up in her system. That all is making a lot of sense to me based on what we've been learning in the last few years. So, I mean, I know that's a possibility. Just a few more minutes, maybe.
Does it come and go?
You know, I feel like it kind of, yeah, sometimes, you know, she's with the grandparents and, her, you know, they have some chocolate cake. I feel like I notice, like I'm trying to pay close attention to if it seems more highlighted and, again,
there's connection.
Makes me feel like it's sugar related. So I've wondered, even cutting back on the natural sugars, like the dried fruits and things like that. But she's three, you know, like there's only so many things that she'll.
I wouldn't worry too much in that way. You kind of have to leave. I think the dietary landscape that you've just laid out is sounds pretty perfect. I wouldn't be, you know, children also do gravitate toward fruit so much more, and we have to allow them that because it is nature's finest, you know, conductor of life force, and they need that.
Yeah.
And provider. So I would say don't pull that out necessarily, but watch it. See what, you know, try and keep an eye on those patterns. Is there anything that would associate psychologically, is there any kind of family history that would associate with the hands, something that could carry energy? Because we're talking about all these things. We can talk about food till the cows come home, but really, we're talking about energy, and it's a manifestation of an imbalanced energy. So could there be another source of it? The hands, you know, we think about like what the hands do. The backs of the hands are interesting because it's not so much the giving-receiving. I can't really identify the role of the back of the hand in that way except for being a support to the mechanics of the hand. But is there anything you can think of that, even though it sounds like it's kind of off on a tangent, and I'm not trying to get too weird with you, but
no,
is there anything even your grandparents?
I think it's worth, you know, thinking through it that way, that she's a wildly emotional little creature. I mean, she already picks up on my vibes no matter whether they're positive or negative, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely, absolutely possible that there's, you know, her dad's mm-hmm. a musician. I mean, maybe.
Oh, really? What does he do?
You know,
what does he play?
He's a guitar player and mm-hmm. plays everything for them. We're a guitar player, so, I mean, we use our hands in our home, I guess, in that regard. You know, I'm cooking all the time, mm-hmm. he's playing all the time. We're caring for mm-hmm. others a lot. Mm-hmm. serving and supporting them creatively.
A lot of your energy and your husband's energy is actually, I hope I'm not putting anyone off with this, but like you're using your hands a lot. You're both, he's mm-hmm. playing guitar, you're creating, you're in the kitchen. You think she's taking some of the stress into her own hands,
yeah.
her own inability to kind of process what she's experiencing from her parents' world that she would prefer maybe to be different or to be less stressful for them?
Yeah, interesting. Maybe. I'm open to say, you know, mm-hmm. recognize that we have some dialing back to do. So, and we're in a season of, you know, figuring that out, wanting to have another child. And, you know, I'm not mm-hmm. pregnant now, but, you know, it's on our radar. And so, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, maybe mm-hmm. it's interesting to think about it like that. And I know that her, you know, between us trying to navigate our time and energy for all those things and for her, it's wild that it would show up right there consistently, you know, in that.
And
in
they're out there
the
in the open for everyone to see as well. It's like, you know, it sounds like it's probably a combination of things, but I would say, you know, kids are so sensitive. They're such little absorbers. And they have no way of expressing yet articulating what they really might feel and think, both because they don't necessarily have the language to do so yet and because they're not sure if it's really appropriate and if it's, you know, they're learning all the social customs and it doesn't seem to follow. None of that seems to have a place in our social customs. So I would say maybe try and get her to communicate as much as possible about how she's mm-hmm. feeling, and also don't feel like you have to, it's really important for parents to assume the role of at least appearing to have things kind of in control and figured out. You can communicate to her how you feel, you know, about things without
mm-hmm.
making her, you know, what's the word, to making her insecure.
Mm-hmm.
So that there can there's a sense conductiveness. There's not, when I say that, mm-hmm. I mean like there's a block somewhere, and with your communication to help open up that block wherever it may be as much as possible, and bring that open up that circle so that the conductivity is able to flow freely, and then simultaneously, yes, obviously keeping an eye on the patterns and when she's eating things that are less, you know, advantageous to her system. But it sounds like it's a real tuning in. Like she, you know, children can never get close enough to their parents. You know, they want to be, especially, you know, I think 0 to 5 at least. They want to be right up in there, kind of like, you know, when your children are really little and they're in the crook of your arm. you know, and mm-hmm. and that's where they want to be, because that's, you know, that's where they're going to learn the most and everything. So I think that bringing her as close as possible into you, to communicate and for her to hear your voice, and then to, you know, address the dietetics as you know to do.
Mm-hmm. Natalia, can I just offer something too, kind of along those lines? My daughter Madeline has an allergy to eggs, but only if they're not cooked very well, and peanut butter. And then something else came up, and it was it's some certain animals. So she would be around like certain dogs, and if they licked her, then, you know, so it was the saliva or the hair or something. Mm-hmm. We couldn't actually really figure it out. And one of my favorite pediatrician, that she's a naturopathic doctor, one thing that she said is that that allergies are just reactivity. They're just reactivity showing up in the body. But in general, it's this reactivity that she has. So that was hard for me to hear, because I was like, well, what do I do about that? Like, what do I do mm-hmm. about reactivity, and how do I fix that? And, you know, it was right after we'd moved from New York, and I was in a job that required me to be highly reactive. I mean, we had a 2-hour service level agreement. So if someone sent me an email, I had to respond within 2 hours. And it was just this, like, really, really, really reactive all the time. And I realized that I was really passing that along to her, just in the way that I would respond to her. Like, you know, if she was upset, I would react. You know, it was like really mm-hmm. this knee-jerk kind of, again, reactivity. And so what has been remarkable is that as I have worked on that reactivity within myself, she now has completely lost her allergy to eggs. I mean, she can eat eggs, and it was we were real careful with it. And she used to break out, like, immediately. She would break out, her face would break out in rashes. She'd say, oh, my mouth hurts, and she'd start coughing. So she, but now she's able to eat eggs. I haven't tried the peanut butter yet, because I'm scared, just because when she eats the peanut butter, she starts throwing up, and it's, you know, so I'm still avoiding that. But she also has not had a reaction around any animals at all. So I think, you know, along the lines of what Natalia is saying, it's harder because it's not so tangible and it's not easy mm-hmm. to put your finger on. But mm-hmm. if you can just start intuiting as much as you can what it can be that she is reacting to, and then start working on those things within yourself. And part of what we're going to do at the end with the affirmations is something that may help you start to get in touch with what that might be. But I hope that helps too.
Yeah, that's great, Amanda. And one other thing I'd mention, too, is that because there sometimes the manifestation point isn't always the point of origin in the body, you might want to find out from a Chinese doctor what the meridian point is for the area on our hand, and that might help, and it may help to unblock the flow if it's, you know, all of these things together. But I think that could be useful to know for you. And, you know, if it seems like we take a long time on some of these answers, know that we're not just answering the question of the person who's posing it. These kinds of things that come up, they can be applied, you know, this could be, a you know, not a rash in someone's hand, but it could be an incessant cough in a child's chest. It can be, you know, whatever is expressing, try to apply the same levels of reasoning. And, you know, and then this answer should hopefully be of benefit to many more people.
Yeah, thank you. Can you just clarify for me when you said the meridian point? What do you, go see a Chinese doctor, like an acupuncturist or like a...
Yeah, you may or may not even need to go to see someone, but yes, an acupuncturist or an acupressurist, someone who understands qi flow, if, you know, the pathways in the body, the meridians, and the points on them are called the nadis, N-A-D-I-S. And you could probably even upload, you know, from the internet a chart that shows the meridian lines and see if you can identify where on her hand it's flowing and figure out if you can link up the meridian, because the meridians are all linked to the vital organs. And you could probably figure out, even, you know, when you think about your hands and your feet, it's like there's a little man in your hands and your feet. You have all the organs, all the even everything from the sinuses, you know, to the nervous system. The whole thing is in each part of the body, really. I mean, you know, even, you know, in our mammary glands and our sexual glands, and if you look in the iris of the eyes, there's a practice called iridology you may be familiar with, where you can see the whole, you know, person inside the iris of the eye. So this is one way that we can take the body apart to figure out, to see the body holistically. And you know, the reflexology would probably, because reflexology applies to the hands as well as the feet, so a great reflexologist would probably also be able to identify a lot more, you know, than we can, you know, without that back of the hand knowledge, so to speak.
Right. Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Good luck with it. If you learn anything more, and you know, to even help enlighten us, please do share.
I will. I will keep an eye on how the progress goes. So thanks for the ideas. I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Natalia, let's see. We have Lillian. I see you have a 3. I don't know if that's your hand raised or if that's a mistake. Are you there, Lillian?
Yeah. Hi.
Hi. Did you have a question or
hi.
Did you?
Well, actually, I mean to buzz in, but I do want to just share a little thing. I'm not a child, but I've had eczema for basically ever, and I just had a little breakthrough recently, and I just wanted to share you this. I found this eczema balm at Whole Foods, and it's been really great for my symptoms, and it's something I never tried before, so just wanted to recommend that. And also, I love taking hot baths. It's one of my favorite things, but recently I've just tried kind of scaling that back a little bit, and it's really helped my symptoms a lot. So just wanted to share that, and everything that you guys have said just really rings true to me, so I appreciate it.
Oh, good.
Great.
Thank you so much for sharing, Lillian. Yeah, just to clarify, you've stopped taking hot baths, and you're taking an eczema bath. I didn't hear that properly. From Whole Foods?
It's a product that I got at Whole Foods. It's called Eczema Balm, Eczema. And it's just
B-A-L-M, right?
It's the main ingredient and some herbs. And it's been really great. But and I just was reading an article that said that your skin, when you have eczema, can be to the hot water. And so I just... Mm-hmm. I still take them every now and then because it's really nice for me, but it's really helped my symptoms a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's really interesting. No, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you, Lillian. Okay, and then Rebecca. Rebecca, you don't have a 1, but I'm wondering if you also have a question or a comment. Rebecca, are you there? It might be a mistake. Okay, that's all right. Okay, so let's go to another question that we have that someone asked earlier. Okay, I'd like to bring up a topic that I don't believe has been discussed on calls, in the exclusive member materials, or in the books, in a way that hones in on this question. It has to do with balance and navigating priorities. After being in this lifestyle for 4 to 5 years, it seems as though life functions best for me when I have 2 to 3 hours per day for myself to fit in facilitating the B movement, meditating, exercise, meal planning, and food preparation. I know many of us are extremely busy, and while everyone's exact situation looks slightly or vastly different, I'll describe my situation for purposes of illustration for the question to be answered. I am a single mother. I work full-time with a high-paced, successful corporate career. My children are young, ages 3 and 5, so during the work week, my time is booked between 8 and 6 for work and traffic, and my children need and deserve me in the other hours. I have childcare in the morning to help get the kids off to school, lunch is packed, and the house tidied, so theoretically, I could fit in 2 hours of the BM and exercise in the morning, leaving 1 hour for meditation in the evening, but I find that cutting into my sleeping hours, and lately, my body will just not give up that extra hour or two of sleep. Clearly, on a day-to-day basis, it is a matter of juggling through the priorities. Most often, it is my exercise and the time for the B movement that is frequently sacrificed, which hinders my progress. I'm curious if you have any thoughts for myself and others out there who constantly try to navigate through this jungle of responsibilities while remaining superbly responsible to meeting the needs of my own self-care. Thank you in advance.
Well, that's definitely an issue close to my heart. I mean, having three children and knowing what I like to do, what I need to do to neutralize this crazy city I live in and all the demands that, you know, that I would prefer not be part of my life. You know, I think a few things. Number one is figure out what your hierarchy is. Like, what is the most important to you, and what things you can circulate throughout the week. Keep in mind that the more grounded you get in this, the more rooted you become in the perspective of unity consciousness, and the more you understand that unity consciousness is about conductivity of energy, flowing through your system, your whole being, into the web of consciousness, and then the reception of that flowing back to you in every way, whether you're jumping on a trampoline, or you're having a conversation with someone, or you're loving on your child, it's an out breath and an in breath. It's constantly flowing. And when you can live in that mentality and that perspective, then you won't need to set time aside to meditate as much, and you won't necessarily need to put the same time into exercise either. Not to say that you shouldn't make sure that your body has absolutely, you know, critical chi flow every day, whether it's rebounding or doing sun salutations or riding your bike or whatever it might be for you, hiking in the mountains. But when you can walk through your life with that state of mind, you're going to wind up conducting chi through your body like no one who spends time at the gym or who spends tons of time chopping their vegetables and things. You're living in it. You're doing it. So that's one thing to keep in mind. And, you know, a lot of time we can get into our head and think, okay, we have to check off all these things. But then the rest of our day, we're just, you know, living normally. Or even when we're doing those things, when we're jumping on the trampoline or when we're exercising, we're not really in our bodies. We're not really conducting as we should be. So, you know, think about how sometimes the things we do can be crutches for the things we need to become, if that makes sense. So that's not to say that there shouldn't be distinct time to grow in your deepening. To, you know, the time you put aside to meditate should be a time that you're not just getting centered, but that you're able to deepen your concept of what centeredness means. So often what winds up happening is we spin our wheels in the world's world, and then we want to get back into our world where we're happier, and so we take the time away from the world and fix it, and then we go back and we do it again. And that's an exhausting cycle. It's actually just going to, you know, it might keep us level for a while, but the output is so excruciating, especially if you're, in this case, trying to keep up with family and all that. It's the responsibilities. It's crazy making. So what I'd suggest is keeping the center clear and keeping the accumulation out of the system is essential. So making time for the bowel movement, whatever it takes to make sure that's clear, I would say that that's the most critical thing, because if that's clear, then your walk to work, your walk up the stairs, your whatever you're doing, if you're breathing well, that's where the conductivity is going to be amplified. It's going to be optimal. So that's the big thing. If you know, but do you need an hour to exercise? No. 20 minutes, fine. That's enough. Maybe there's certain times when you up the ante, or certain times when you do a little bit more, and maybe that's on a day when there's less demanded of you in other ways. Maybe it's a matter of, you know, in this case it sounds like she might have her own office. Maybe have a trampoline in the office, because, you know, 5 minutes here or there on the trampoline, just keep the chi flowing. Or maybe it's a matter of closing your door and doing an inversion for 5 minutes, or keeping a body slant board or an inversion board in your office. You know, I'm sure that, you know, in some cases, not all office scenarios, but in some cases, you can be really creative and, you know, might be surprised that everyone's kind of okay with it, or, you know, maybe not, but maybe you can go for a walk in the middle of the day. It's very hard, and we're working in opposition to nature. And whenever we live in opposition to nature, we're doomed. And that's basically what we're all coming to, is a sense of, okay, so we're trying to create a world where we can have what we love and still not, you know, have to move, as Amanda has, to Hawaii. But really, we all do have to do that. We're just all spinning our wheels and you know, and pretending that we don't. So we have to make friends with this idea that we're living in opposition to nature, that we're trying to create a utopia or this bliss that's totally available to the human being, but not if they're living in opposition to nature, not if they're not part of the interconnected web, or if they're part of it for half of their life but not the other half. And so there's a price to be paid whenever we're not doing that. So I think it's just be really, really honest and say, we can't make it perfect by plugging in a colonic, a rebound, you know, a meditation. We're going to really help neutralize it, but that's about it. So then it becomes a matter of, okay, what are our priorities? Let's make sure that in the course of the week, we get to all of them more than once. But we might not be able to, because we're not living in this perfect world yet, because we haven't had the gumption to walk away from it all yet and call it a day, we're still going to wind up having to make certain compromises. And this is the price we pay. While we do that, you know, a few other things to think about. Find as many opportunities to flow with life as possible. So, for example, one of the things that I've discovered recently is that even though my pattern of living has been, I tend to like to stay up a little bit later than I should, and I tend to like to have my to eat abundantly before I go to bed. And I found that I'm so much better off with a new baby if I forego that need to have that time of my own in the evening and, you know, that unwind and that reading my book and having the big indulgent dinner, that if I can just scale back on that, if I can, instead of having the super size me salad, have a regular size salad, go to bed with the sun, which is when my daughter wants to go to bed, my newborn, or she's 4 months now, and, you know, she wants to lie down at 8:30 in the crook of my arm and go to sleep for the night. If I can go with that, which was really hard for me in the beginning because I was feeling really kind of resentful, I decided, you know, let me just, okay, we're doing this. We're doing this now. And I don't need to make sure that I've eaten everything I want to eat because I love this food so much. I mean, that's like probably if there's an Achilles heel, if there's a temptation of mine, it's just that, like, I can't get enough of a delicious big salad. And so if I can just put it aside and go with her flow and get into bed, not on a full stomach, and lie down with her and go to sleep, and, you know, and even if I wake up at midnight for a little bit, not because she's waking me up, because she's just, you know, nursing through the night and happily, you know, suckling, and that she doesn't really need to wake up at all, I might wake up, open my eyes for a few minutes, and go back to sleep. And then at 5:30 or 6, when she's ready to get up again, I feel revived. And if I'd pushed against that flow, I would feel exhausted. If I pushed to stay up and I found a different way to get her down, you know, instead, I wake up at 5:30 with the sun with her. Not only am I flowing with her cycle, but I'm flowing with nature's cycle. And I'm not having screens flashing at me or trying to answer emails at 10 o'clock at night because I couldn't do it during the day. I'm just giving all that up. I'm flowing with her. And I can't tell you the huge leap that's made just in my sort of ability to be happy in this world that sometimes seems like I'm having to compromise with so much, just because I'm much more in flow with nature. So that's just an example in my life. I'm sure, Amanda, you have many examples to offer as well. But let's figure out where are we opposing nature where we don't have to be, so that we can take a big burden off ourselves. So what I wind up feeling is way more energized without having to make all these neutralizing, you know, to doing all these other things I would have to do to spend so much time to fix myself because I was living in opposition to nature. I hope that helps a little bit. Amanda, is there anything you'd like to contribute?
Yeah, I mean, in this, again, I know that for so many of you this sounds extreme, but I can really relate with this as well because I was in the same exact situation, and I did have a successful career, and I did really, on the outside, have everything that we all strive for. You know, the successful career, the money that comes with that, the, you know, the kids and the husband and the place in New York and all of it. And for me, it was just this process of stepping back. It was getting to where you're at and going, ooh, wow, I see where this is going. I see that I can either choose to do like Natalia said and be in constant opposition to nature and continue to find solutions to this, solutions and Band-Aids that will help me feel better for a little bit. But what do I really want? Like, what do I really, really want for my life, for my children, for myself, and then going for that? And it was a process. It's not totally easy, and I know it's in a lot of people's heads. It's like, wow, well, I can't just do that. I can't just get up and do that. But I'd like to offer that sometimes you just can, and it's really just a matter of doing it. And it sounds crazy and scary and all those things, but I have to say it has been the best move of my life on every single level, spiritual, physical, mental, emotional, family, relationship, career. And I know that I could have stayed in New York City and I could have been fine. I mean, I was fine. I wasn't miserable.
You had a very seductive life. I mean, you have the life in New York that people aspire to.
Yes.
That, you know, when you see all the little, you know, like all the little couples and stuff trying to make their way, you
yeah.
guys have gotten there, and you could have ridden that train for everything
easily.
Everyone loves it for. Yeah.
Easily. And I wasn't miserable. I wasn't, like, totally unhappy. It was that point where it's like, wow, you have all those things. And I'm shopping in the best boutiques, and I'm eating in the best restaurants, and I'm doing all these things, and there's still something missing. And what is that? And so that was just a process of really tuning into my heart. Where do I really want to be in this life? What do I really want to do in this life? So it was this process of tuning into my intuition, tuning into my heart. My husband and I had been to Hawaii so many times in the past and thought, God, it'd be amazing to live here. Wow, it'd be so cool to live here. And then just write that off as, well, that's never going to happen. But then it was like, well, maybe it can happen. Why not? Why can't we do that? And I'm not saying a geography move would be the end-all be-all, and it isn't, because, again, everywhere you go, there you are. So don't think that, oh, I can just escape and just go and, you know. But I have to say, when the environment is nurturing and supportive, and when the community is nurturing and supportive, that you're in this place that you're cradled and you're able to make shifts in your life that are just, you can do it. I think you can do it. Natalia's done it. You've done it in New York City for a long time. And I'm shocked and amazed at how much you can do being in that environment. But it's possible, but there's also another option. I don't want everyone to feel trapped, that there is no other way. There is other ways. There's places we can live that aren't so expensive. There's places that we can live that are much closer to nature. And we can do that. And I just want to offer that is an option, and it's available to you. And if your heart's calling you in a direction, it will continue to call. It will continue to pull until you do it. So you can either do it now or do it later or not ever do it. But, you know, for me, it was like, okay, let's just do it. Let's go. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, in fact, I think a really good, it's extraordinary what you did, and I think there are a lot of people who really, it is time for them to do that. You know, I think the one step to do it where before you do that is to really use the opportunity of being where you are to harmonize yourself as much as possible.
Yeah.
And that way, when you do make them, if you wind up making a move, you might not, but if it's in the cards for you, then you won't be taking all your stuff with you. You'll be making a light move. And I think the trick for me, I would say, if anything, is keeping me in a good space here, not only feeling like I have a very distinct reason to be here, and I feel like I'm harmonized with my life's path, so that makes it okay, but everything that was in opposition to nature that was it was part of my life here, I made sure to look in the eye and honestly make sense of, so that I was living a truly authentic life, that my relationship with my husband was authentic, that my relationship with my children, if I was colluding with things that, you know, I was pretending I didn't want to look at it because I wasn't doing, I looked at them and I saw that I was doing them. And if I was going to continue to do them, I was going to take responsibility for the fact that I was agreeing to do it. And then once you get that honest with your life, life becomes so much lighter. And I think, you know, in terms of New York City, they say, you know, if you can make it here, you make it anywhere. I say if you can find harmony and peace and interconnectivity here, you can find it, you can do it anywhere.
Yes.
So it's, if you're in a zone that's chaotic, you know, use that as an opportunity to become as rooted and interconnected and harmonized with nature as you can, and you'll see that you can walk through anything if you have that on your side. And neutralize as much as you need to, but know that the tools we use to neutralize are not meant to give us the kind of anxiety that they sometimes do by us trying to make sure that we accomplish them like a checklist on every day. And, you know, my perfect morning, sure, it's going for my bike ride, it's making sure my system is clear, it's if I have time to lie down and have a deep meditation, that's a dream day. But if I wake up and get thrown into the, the concrete jungle, the jungle and all the beasts, you know, then that's the time I'm going to have to make sure that I'm fully in alignment. And whether or not I've jumped on my trampoline or had a time to clear my bowels, which, I have to be that which I know to be, no matter what. And then when you can conquer that, it's more to do, you know, because the whole world is an illusion anyway. The fact that we touch matter and it's solid is an illusion. So, you know, whether you're in an office or you're, you know, somewhere in your beautiful garden, you know, in South America or somewhere, beautiful. It's all a matter of what your spirit has attained anyway. How clear are you? I love that in the ancient Egyptians, the legend was that if when you died, your heart got put on the balances next to a feather, and if your heart was heavier than the feather, you didn't go to heaven. If your heart was lighter than the feather, you did. So, you know, how can we create these in our being a sense of lightness? And that's really what this is all about. It's clearing the pathways so we can have pure life force flowing through us. It's conducting. It makes us lighter. It makes us more joyful. It makes us less attached to everything. It makes us less needful. It's walking through life with that light as a feather feeling. And this is, a great opportunity for this individual and for all of us to figure out what still weighs us down. Why do we still need so much neutralizing? And if we're so focused on the neutralizing with all these outside activities, I mean, yes, on the one hand, we say to you, you know, if you're going to detox and you need all these tools, but it's kind of like going to yoga class. At some point, you shouldn't need the class. Yoga or meditation or any of these things are about how you move through the world. It's just you only need it for as long as you need to learn how to open your body up. Once your body becomes open, then you live a life that doesn't calcify you. So it's a really tough thing to do. But in the meantime, you have all the tools, and you keep working them, and you use them as much as you need to. And you might use them forever, and I'm always going to look to them to help me rebalance if I need rebalancing, and I think they're a very useful tactic, certainly for me in my life now, to do on a regular basis. But don't let them control you and rule you. Make sure that your center is where you make your decisions from and how you rule your life and your day. And then if those things have their place. I hope that makes sense.
It's a big question. I mean, it really is. And I think, we can answer it on the practical level and then answer it on the big picture level. And hopefully it's helpful on both levels, how we were able to answer it.
Yeah. I think, on a practical level, I would say, too, I mean, depending on how old the kids are, you know, I always...
3 and 5.
My son... 3 and 5. Okay, my son, when he loved the sound of the Almain audios and meditations. So I remember I would just put them on, and he would kind of zone out and listen to them, and I'd lay down, or I would put him on the floor with toys, in the bathroom while I'd have a bath. They love, both my kids would just sit and watch me rebound, and then they'd fight me for the rebounder. So we would.
That's a great point. Yeah, and I think important for our kids to see us doing those kinds of things too. I think that they also benefit a lot from that. And you know, like I'll put the Louise Hay 101 power affirmations on, and I'll have it so that my kids can hear it too, because they're absorbing all that as well. So
We don't have to shut the door and say, hey, this is mommy time. If we really need to do that, or you know, maybe that's when we go out and have our exercise outside the house or something. And it's so important to have separate time as mom.
Yeah, totally.
So important. But kids can also respect that too. You know, if the kids were big enough that they didn't have to have the constant supervision. You know, we live in an apartment. It's not like they can go get lost in a giant house. But you know, I would say, okay, mommy's going to actually have a nap now, or mommy's going to do her meditation now. See ya. You know, go and read a book.
Yeah.
And then the door would get shut, and they would know. And then I'd be like, you know, unless the house is burning down, you know, don't come in.
Yeah.
Lovingly, don't come in.
Totally.
You know, and they got used to that, and they were cool with that. And then they'd come out, and they'd see that I was like this beaming, happy mommy afterward, and they knew they were gonna get that if they could just give me my time.
Yeah.
Then, you know, so I think, it's a matter of making sure that giving your kids, it's a sense of empowerment for them to know that they are part of, you know, this lifestyle that you keep, and that it's okay. It's good for mommy to do things that she needs to do.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it.
Okay. Okay, so we have one more question I'd like to take live, and then let's do the meditation and affirmations. But hopefully this will be a quick one, maybe, maybe not. Heather, hi.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're good.
I have a question that you guys kind of answered for me, and I just started crying a little bit while y'all were talking about it. But homeschooling, my son's going into the second grade, and he's in a great program. It's French immersion. We're in Southwest Louisiana, so it's kind of a cultural thing at the same time. But my concern here is that he likes being outside. He literally goes, digs in dirt, comes in and out of the house. He's making arrows today, going and cutting down wood, you know. And so my thing is, I'm home with my daughter and I teach online. And it's like if my daughter and I are getting all this outside time, this play time that's so important to him, to us, why can't he have it? And I find that, you know, I've gotten to a point where I know I can balance it out. But I wanted to see if you guys have seen other people like us homeschooling. You know, what are the benefits? Is there anything negative that comes out of it? I just wanted to kind of get your take on it.
Mm-hmm. I do, Amanda, but if you want to go ahead and go first, if you...
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think that, first of all, I think check in with your heart. And I think you probably already know the answer to this. And so I think let that, like, if you can have the courage to do that without knowing exactly how it's going to work out, because sometimes we don't. And there isn't a clear cut. If you do this, your kid will end up like this. There are no guarantees, ever, no matter what you do. If he's in the French immersion school or if he's in homeschool, we aren't the dictators of that. But if you can tune into your heart, and if you can tune into your child, which you can, then you're going to know what the answer to this is. So, you know, I think for myself, I've noticed the same exact thing. It was here, I'm in Hawaii, and I was bringing my daughter to the Waldorf school, which is one of the reasons why we came to this area. And it's a great, sweet school, and she does have a ton of playtime and outdoor time. But I started noticing that we didn't go to the ocean as much, and she doesn't get to go up to Volcano, and she's not learning about, you know, the stars and all these things around us that it's like we're so richly immersed in. It's like, why am I sending her to a little classroom? You know, so I'm in the same sort of boat with you right now and really deciding what do I want her educational experience to look like? And yes, that's a little scary because it's going to be way different than mine, and it's going to be way different than most kids, but I know that there's another way to do it, and I know that there's a way they did it years and years and years ago that looks so different than the way we're doing it now. So for me, it's about how can I put her in an environment where she's going to learn, where she is going to, but learn because she's drawn and led by what she feels is exciting to learn about. Hold on one second, sweetie. Speaking of the devil. So I think that, and I think, Natalia, go ahead. That's all I want to say. Right now.
Beautiful. Yeah, it's really beautiful. I love what you said. Everyone I know who's homeschooled has had a heart for homeschooling, has had a heart for their children in a way that, I mean, also all mothers have a heart for their children, but I mean, you know, they could be that kind of a homeschooling mom in the best possible way. They would be present, they would be involved in all that. Not just like, okay, kid, go online, see what your courses are today and do them, and I'll see you in a few hours. I think given that, these kids are amazing. I mean, they're all fantastic. I have one friend who actually has 8 children, and she homeschooled all of them, and, you know, I find it jaw-dropping.
That's amazing.
And the kids are, like, every single one of them plays another instrument and speaks another language, and I'm just thinking, I just feel, like, completely impotent when I'm around her. She's so awesome. But her children are amazing, and, you know, and she integrates them with sports and different things as well, and they're down in Georgia. But, you know, I think it also has to do a lot with your child's life purpose, their destiny. And sometimes our kids have to dunk themselves into certain societal paradigms to get a sense of what those are, because it has to do with their, whatever they're supposed to be doing with their life. So you can't really make a mistake in that way, because your son's, your children's lives are, I'm presenting something that, you know, is from my perspective. I think that that our souls come into this world. We choose our parents. We have the lifeline that we intend to pursue, the things that we want to learn in this lifetime, and I think that's why our parents really can't make mistakes. We look back and we say, oh, I wish you did this or that differently, mom and dad. In effect, I don't think they had as much of a say in it as we'd like to think they did. And we can all take responsibility for where we are in the world today and what our experiences were, all, you know, good and bad. But I would say certainly ask him. Well, of course, you tune in and make the best choice for him.
He's decided he's going to be homeschooled.
Yeah. Can we say that again? I'm sorry.
He's going to be homeschooled, and we speak Spanish. So, I mean, as long as my only concern was finding someone to keep French up with, and we speak French, but not fluently in the house. We only speak Spanish fluently in the house. So, that was my only concern. And you have to question it. And I don't really know enough people well enough to say, okay, what do you think? You know. There's a community here, but I don't have friends in the community. But I really wanted to get your take on it. But you're right; it should be instinctual for me to know.
Well, one thing, Heather, you may want to post this on the community in Life Force Families too, because I'm sure there's a lot of other people who have this question. And don't feel bad that you're asking, because I think it's awesome that we bounce these things off each other, especially in this sort of trusted community. So it's great that you bring it up, and I'm sure many other people are benefiting from the question too. It's really a great segue, actually, into the affirmations, because a lot of the things that Natalia was bringing up and a lot of the things that I was saying are actually in the affirmations. So if you guys are okay to jump into that. Natalia, did you have something else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, no, I would. I did want to say something about unschooling, and there's a great book called The Unschooling Manual. A lot of people don't understand the concept of unschooling, and it's basically this idea that basically your community uses everything that everybody knows, and that the kids go to if they have an inclination to want to learn sailing. Well, they go to the local, you know, they go in the shipping, the fishing boat of the sailor, and they,
mm-hmm.
you know, learn everything they want to learn, they learn from their community. And that's, you know, the ideal way for children to learn anyway, because they follow their passion. And so if you, for example,
right.
Have a nautical interest, then you're going to learn mathematics, and you're going to learn how to keep a logbook, and you're going to learn all these things. They're going to parlay really every subject, you know, from science to language, everything into that particular area. And the kids learn most dynamically and most fully in that kind of an environment. So I would say, as you pursue a homeschooling option, even though we don't have a lot of unschooling communities in this culture, I don't know if we have any, see if there's a way to weave more of that concept into it. And the book is called The Unschooling Manual. I can't remember
okay.
who writes it, but it may help as you do this. But that's all for now. Yeah, Amanda,
well, yeah.
I hand it over to you.
Well, Natalia, actually, that's the direction that I'm definitely going, is in
yep.
that unschooling
mm-hmm.
direction. So Heather, we can you know, as you read that book, and I'm happy to share as that continues to unfold. But that's really, especially
okay.
in a place like this, where I'm like, wow, we could be learning everything about everything just by going
right.
with, you know, what gets the kids excited. So yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll
so
post something on the website. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
You guys,
all right,
care.
Everybody. So we're going to do a little, just kind of like a little meditation, in the sense that I would love if everybody, if you're in a place where you can get quiet, that'd be great. If you're not, it's not a big deal. But go ahead and make sure you're seated in a comfortable position. And just close your eyes. And take three deep breaths, really deep breaths, in through your nose and out through your nose. And I'm going to just go ahead and read these affirmations, and I'll put a little bit of space in between them so you can just let them absorb a little bit. I release all conditioning and programming of what a good parent looks like, and I let go of others' expectations of me and my child. I understand that I do not own my children. My children are spirits in physical bodies with their own life purpose. My children have been given their own opportunity to grow and unfold according to their unique pattern. It is not my place to interfere with this trajectory by placing my own, others, or society's expectations upon them. I stay present with my children. I listen to them and enjoy their company. My child learns the most from my actions. Therefore, I speak and instruct less and demonstrate more. I live a life that is authentic, joyful, and purposeful. I wish peace, joy, and fulfillment for my child, and I am dedicated to unveiling this in my own life. I realize I cannot protect my child from all pain, nor do I want to. My child must have many life experiences in order to grow and unfold. It is not that I wish pain upon her, but I also recognize that when discomfort arises, it provides the greatest opportunity for growth. My children are my greatest teachers. It is not for me to always play the wise, all-knowing role. It is entirely possible that my child is wiser and more experienced on a soul level than I am. I open myself up to the lessons and opportunities that parenting children provides. I can only love my child as much as I love myself. I make it a priority to take care of my physical, mental, and emotional health. I love myself, and I'm so grateful for this opportunity I have to live this life with my children in this moment. There is always a solution to every challenge in which everyone wins. When I find myself compromising my own good for the sake of my child or anyone else, I know a better solution exists. I open myself up to divine inspiration so this better possibility may be revealed to me. Whenever negative emotions arise, such as frustration, embarrassment, anger, or sadness, I know this is a red flag that there is something deeper within me that needs evaluating, cleaning, and clearing. When I am on the verge of reacting in this emotional state, I do my best to remove myself from the situation, even if only for a moment, by going into another room or by simply closing my eyes. I find the quiet space within, breathe deeply, and listen to the wisdom of my heart. I let this wisdom guide my next actions. I know that any reaction I display will come from a place of weakness, and my heart will reveal action or non-action that will display strength and truth to my child. I do my best to shine the light of awareness upon my reactivity so that I may heal. My intuition always serves me, and I know how to be a parent to my child. This wisdom and knowledge is coded deep within my cells and DNA. Any tentativeness or uneasiness comes from my concern that I am not doing it right or that I don't know how to be a parent. This is not true. My higher self speaks to me through my intuition, and I do my part by listening and taking action. Like lifting weights to build muscles, I know that the more I do this, the clearer the communication will become, and the easier it will become to take action upon the guidance I am provided. I enjoy being playful with my children. My time with them is truly enjoyable, and I enjoy the laughter, exploration, and playfulness that we experience together. True love is not clingy, needy, fearful, or insecure. If I am acting this way with my children, I know that there is more work to do within myself in order to clean and clear conditioning and programming. My child has her own divine connection with Source. I do whatever I can to respect and honor this connection by empowering my child to listen to her own guidance system. I release all guilt, shame, and fear around any decisions I have made as a parent. Everything is in perfect order, and all souls in my family are learning and growing and evolving due to our shared experiences. Guilt, shame, and fear benefit no one, and most importantly, keep me limited and small. I forgive myself and others for any perceived mistakes that have been made. I release my judgments of other parents. I know that everyone is doing the best they can from their current level of consciousness. Whenever I judge others, I recognize that I'm really judging myself. I release judgment of myself and know I am and always have been doing my best from whatever level of consciousness I am living from. I see strength and beauty in my children. I choose to see them in their highest light, and by committing to this vision of them, I bring about those qualities within them. My role as a parent is just that, a role that I am playing. I recognize that my true identity is not mom, spouse, partner, business owner, or any other title I espouse right now. I am an eternal, immortal, and universal spirit, and I will play all roles throughout my soul's evolution. Although I do my best to learn all I can while playing each role, I do not overly identify with any title or role, as I recognize that my soul is all-encompassing and ever-changing. I trust that there is a bigger picture that I do not always see. I let go of my need to control and allow life to happen through me. There are no guarantees about anything in my life, so I enjoy each and every moment as it arises. I encourage my children to follow their bliss. I know that their unique talents and interests reflect their purpose here on Earth, and I support them in their cultivation and exploration of these gifts. Go ahead and take a really deep breath right now. You can go ahead and open your eyes. Hopefully some of those thoughts are helpful for you as you navigate this wonderful experience that we call parenthood. There's more of those, and we can share them if you found them helpful as we continue on these calls together. And we wish you all a wonderful day, and this recording will be available within the next couple of days from the Life Force Families website. Thank you all for joining, and we will talk with you very soon. Aloha, everyone.
Thank you,